Gratien Daze. I'm in Belgium from Antwerp, independent IT consultant. Today, as you can see, I will talk about IPv6 and what the future will bring. I don't want to start with an agenda, that's too boring. I prefer to start with a conclusion. Okay, does it mean that the internet will end today? Oh, of course not. Just want to bring the message that the current internet space, the IPv4, almost ended up with giving away free internet blocks. But still, IPv4 will be available for a very long time. I believe 20 years is more than realistic. IPv6 has been out for more than 10 years, and it is now growing faster than IPv4. Well, it's normal, IPv4 is almost finished giving away free blocks. We will see that from this year on, IPv6 will be more getting deployed, at least in Asia, and in Europe is also quite popular. It's not because we want to, because we must, in fact, because if you request a new IPv4 address in some areas, like in Asia, you only get an IPv6 address. So you have no choice then, go to IPv6. Don't be afraid, during the talk I will explain how we can start with it, how we can deploy it, and what are the transition methods and the do's and don'ts, very important. Also want to mention that this talk is not for network administrators, but more for Linux and Unix system administrators. So I want to keep it practical, not too detailed, otherwise you will lose the message. Okay, some abbreviations that you will see on the slides during this talk, don't want to mention. Important is the NAT, Autonomous Systems, that is, for those who don't know it, are in fact backbone routers that know the router tables of the IPv4 and IPv6. And that's used quite a lot to count how many routable address spaces are available on the internet. Okay, some history. Before 2000, there was already, people were afraid that the IPv6 addresses would run out quite fast. It was estimated by 2008. So this is a picture before 2000 or ending in 2001 perhaps. You could see already an explosion, an exponential growth of the IPv4 addresses used. So they were very, very much afraid by the end of the previous decade. And for some reason, well, it's not for some reason, because there were a lot of internet groups that start thinking about it and that invented, in fact, the CIDR, the classless inter-domain routing, which could divide an IPv4 address, for example, a C class, in much smaller chunks. That made possible that the internet IPv4 addresses wasn't running out that fast. Also, the use of the NAT, the Network Address Translation, that can hide hundreds or even thousands of inside IP addresses, private IP addresses, to the outside. Sometimes you needed only 1, 2, 3, 4 official IP addresses, and then you could do with a small CIDR IPv4 address class. That was the case, and that made possible that the IPv4 address space was not running out till today, in fact. So the history of IPv6, to start with, was first written in papers in 94 of the previous decade. Already said, it was expected to run out sooner, but that didn't happen, because of the CIDR and the NAT, which is explained also, but also the dot crisis and the financial bubble of a few years ago. You could really see in the address space flow that there was a small decline effect in plats from an increase. But today the internet is growing extremely fast due to the mobile devices, you know, the iPhones, all the other Androids and the iPads stuff. It's so implosive and it goes really, really fast today. This is a picture till last month, something, January. And you can now really see, if you look at the previous picture, it was around here. and it was already, they already thought it was almost finished. But today, we are here. And you will see it's 1 billion addresses. You think, oh, we, in the 32-bit space, address space, we have 4 billion addresses. It's not completely true. I will explain. The IPv4 is 32 bits. That means 4 billion addresses approximately. It is divided in 5 classes, but the main 3 classes are listed here. And it is also the sizing of the amount of IPv4 addresses in one class that is a responsible effect of that there are not enough free addresses anymore. Because the A and B, you can see in one AR class, there's 60 million, more than 60 million IPv4 addresses. Just to note that 90% of the A classes were given away in the beginning days of the internet, more than 20 years ago, in the United States. That means a lot of companies in the US have A classes for a few thousand systems. So that means that almost 70% of the A and B classes are not used. So that makes 3 billion, and we are now almost 1 billion given away, so that gives 4 billion. This is also a picture of a few months ago that predicted effect, how fast it goes. And you can really see that the red line is the official instance of that gave away the official IPv4 blocks to the regional internet registries. And the green line is what is still available at the regional internet registries. For example, the ASPEC one has no more free address spaces anymore. And there's still another one that I forgot for a moment, but okay. The history of IPv6, as I said, it started already in the 98 of previous decade, but at that moment the backbone routers were not ready because of the Cisco and the other big ones already had IPv6, but it was not readily deployed in all the firmwares of the routers. Today, after 10 years, that's it, the case. So we don't have to be afraid. The internet is ready for serving IPv6. But also, which is more important, your local laptop. Every laptop on Linux, macOS, even Windows, does have IPv6 protocol stack available and working. Very important. That gave us time effect, and now we are ready to start with it. For some people, they're already using IPv6 in the background, but they don't know it. As said, IPv6 is more an Asia and Europe thing for the moment, and in the States, because there are so many A classes that don't feel the rush to go to IPv6. That's much. But okay, that's also deployed over there, so don't be afraid. That is a picture that is showing the AS, the Internet Backbone Routers, and which were serving today already IPv6 traffic. By the way, it's only between 1 and 2% of the internet traffic today that is IPv6, all the rest is IPv4. This picture shows that, for example, the Netherlands and Germany, that IPv6 is quite popular already. And there are some other countries there. But still, it is not that huge in amount effect. But it is growing, that's a good sign. I read a paper a few weeks ago that the internet backbone routers have now more than doubled the IPv6 address traffic in the last couple of months. So that's a very good sign. So that means that IPv6 is growing faster than IPv4 today. I give you some addresses here where you can look up, for example, for your own country, how far it is in deploying IPv6. Unfortunately, most service providers, local service providers, that's your ISPs by the way, are not ready always, or that's a sad picture. But they're working on it from this year on, so we hope that by the end of this year, next year, everybody can get an IPv6 native link from at home. That would be very interesting. But today, only about 30-35% internet service providers can give you an IPv6 address. That doesn't mean that you cannot start with it. I will talk about it later on. Let's go some in more details of IPv6 itself. The most drastic change from IPv4 to IPv6 is affect the address space. IPv4 was 32 bits, IPv6 is 128 bits. That's quite a lot. If you ask me to pronounce this, the best I can give you is 340 undecillion. Okay. Okay. But important to remember is that the 120 bits are in fact split in two. You have to remember that the first bit here is always the network ID, and the last 46 bits are used for your interface. It's quite important to remember, split in two. The internet address space is also divided, more or less. If you request an official IPv6 address to RAI, for example, you will get a 48 prefix address. That is this here. And the first three bits of an official routable address always starts with a 001. If you put it in binary. Yeah? So this is total here. It gives you still until the 48 to 64 gives you 16 bits effect to divide your internal network. Just think about it. It gives you 65,000 possible subnets in one official IPv6 address. It's incredible. Okay. You will see this a lot in the future, I hope at least. An official IP address normally starts with 200. That's in binary 001. And you will see here, it's not previously IPv4 were decimal dotted addresses for them. Now are 8 groups of hexadecimal digits. And they're divided by a double column, not a dot anymore. So it's important. So that looks quite long, you can't, it's impossible to remember. Therefore you need a very good name resolution, a DNS for it. Important here is you can, the leading zeros can be dropped. That means, for example, when you have 4 zeros, you can remove 3 of them. And then you can write something like this. Makes it a bit better, and also this here can be removed. Makes it easier a bit. But you can even compress it further. It calls the zero compression. That means if you have several zeros after each other, like here, you can replace it by 2 double columns. But what is not allowed is 2 and 2x using double columns, because otherwise you would not know where to expand your zeros anymore, because this means 16 bits of zeros. So this is the common technique, removing the leading zeros and compressing of the zeros. In the IPv6 address types, you have 3 main classes. You have the unicast, which is the unique addresses, which are globally routable. And they always start with the 001 bits. So in hexadecimal, it's 200. Then you have the multicast. The multicast is effectively replacing also the in IPv4 world, the broadcast. And that's an address you can give to a group of systems. I will explain it a bit further, what this means. Anycast is effect, it's kind of, you can put several systems the same IP address. And the first one, the closest one to you will respond. That is used, for example, kind of load balancing techniques. DNS servers are used for that, web servers, and also routers. But it's used a lot also in mobile devices, because if you have a mobile device, you want response from the most nearest device from you, not from the other side of the world, for example. Some other types, address types, you have the unspecified. That means if you're booting, for example, and you don't have an IPv6 address, or it's not defined by default, you have to request it. Your source address are all zeros, that means unspecified. The loopback, you know that also for IPv4, the 127.0.0.1, is now also a 1, only 1 bit enabled, and that means, in fact, here, dot dot, because you can remove all the leading zeros, my compression, 1 slash 128 bits, that means. The linked local unicast is an IPv6 address that you will always see. Once you boot your system, your local internet interface will get a linked local address. I will explain it further on. The multicast are 8 1 bits, and that, if you translate it, is FF00 ……, prefix 8. Prefix 8, that goes back to the 8 bits here. That's always, when you see a prefix, it's always reflecting to the first range of bits. And then the global unicast are all the other addresses which are available. The unicast always starts with 001. First 80 bits here you will get from your RIP, in Europe at least, of your regional internet registry. This is, you can divide it yourself. It's not different than in the current IPv4 world. You have the network people who will decide which department will get which subnet effect. You can even follow the same principles. It's not that different. The interface is still 64 bits available in one subnet. That's huge. So if you translate the 001, it's 200, prefix 3. But usually we'll see that addresses like this are official IP addresses. If you see here 128, that means it's your interface. It's not a routable part anymore. It's your end interface. Anycast can be an official IP address, but it's given to a group of interfaces. I always want to mention, you will see an interface today, or Ethernet 0 for example, can have several IPv6 addresses. That's also different than before. So you can have an official IP address, you can also have an anycast IP address. You always have a linked local IP address, and you can have others. But okay, back to the anycast. So you give an IP address to a group of systems, and if you want the service of one of those, the closest one to you will respond. It is in this area, the plug and play, DNS, webmail, that you will see that kind of service. You have to see it a bit as the load balancers of the IPv6 world. Okay. Nothing special on it. The multicast, is replacing the broadcast type of RP types of addresses in the, it was not an address, it was a method. But the multicast, it starts with 8 bits of 1, then you have a special 4 bits for a flag, and the flag have two meanings today. There could be more in the future, but today it could be transient, so that could be different. And you have a permanent one. It means well-known multicast types of addresses. You will soon see it in a later slide. And then there's a range of 80 bits zeros, and the last 32 bits are for group IDs. Group IDs you have to see as I want to address my query to nodes, to routers, or other kind of devices. I have also an example of it. So if you see one, that means all the nodes in your area, and two is for the routers. Are the most common used multicast group IDs. So the scope. So the 4 bits which are possible is local, your interface only, or on your LAN, your local area network. There's also a possibility of the site, but the site has been deprecated. It was designed in the almost 20 years ago in the IPv6 world, but it's not really used anymore. Today they use the organization level. Organization can be very global also, but it means within your organization. And then you have the global scope. Global scope, if you want to multicast global, good luck. Huh? But more for organization and the link local. Okay, if you see this, for example, that you will see if you snoop your network, you will see more often the kind of addresses. It's a kind of a multicast to all the nodes on the local link. And then you're requesting, for example, a service or an IPv6 address, and that could also be a possibility. Okay, the well-known multicast addresses that you will see quite often are listed here. The nodes, the routers, DHCP. If you want a service from a DHCP server, you will see a request like these ones. NTP, and the last one here, gave some special attention in the next slide, because that's quite important. It's used quite a lot, every time almost, that you check if you have an IPv6 address, or if you got an IPv6 address, you will double check, in fact, if the MAC address is not already in use. That is a technique using the solicited node and multicast group. I will explain it in the next slide. So it's in fact a concatenation of a well-known prefix, the FF0, two, double, same, double colon, one, double colon FF00, double colon 0, 104 bits effect. And then the 24 lower bits, of what we mean lower bits is effect the interface ID part, so the most right for you on the slides. And an example is best to explain it. Here you have an official IPv6 address. You got one from your DHCP server, for example. And you want to make sure that it's not already in use, because that's useful to know. So you're using the technique of the solicit node multicasting. So you use that, that part here, and you blank the rest. Then you take the official one, and you take the last 24 bits, and you combine these. That's an official solicit node multicast address. Of course, you have to translate it into an Ethernet address, because still on the Ethernet LAN interface, you're talking Ethernet. That is always 3333. The F means here for, it's a multicast, and you're requesting an official MAC address, and you just use the last 16 bits then, to have a multicast MAC address. And the interfaces will see that and will respond, oh, that's my part of IP address that I know, and this is my official MAC address. And then by checking twice the source and the destination, what you got back, you will see, okay, it's not in use and it's an official IPv6 address. That technique is always used when you get an IPv6 address. Okay, the scoping. You got a link local address. That's the, it was always looking like this, FE80, and then some other addresses behind it. It's always link global. That means it's not routable. It will not go beyond a router. For the simple reason is this. This is one link. You have here FE80 addresses. If this is a router, then it wouldn't know to which side it should go. So these are not routable to other links. It's only on your local network. So that means that in fact you could use a link local address to talk to your neighbor without having an official IP address, because you always get an IPv6 address when you boot up. The neighbor discovery protocol is in fact replacing the ARP method in IPv4 world. And for using that, we have also an ICPv6 protocol to use that. So that technique is used to discover the neighbor routers, but also the neighbor hosts. And therefore you have, in fact, five types of advertisements for the neighbor solicitation. You ask something, you get a reply, an advertisement, and also for the router. You ask something, you get a reply, an advertisement. And the redirect is effect that the node or router is telling, for this route to the other side of the world, there is a better router. So it redirects you to another one. It's also using the neighbor discovery protocol. Okay, you would could wonder, how is an IPv6 address getting bound to an interface? There's several ways to it. The first one I already mentioned several times, I think, is the link local address. You always get the link local address. And you don't need a router for the simple reason it is not routable at all. And then to configure an IPv6 address, there are in fact three methods. Or you do it manually, just add it in your configuration files. Or you use the automatic way, which is or stateful or stateless. I explain it a bit later. And then the third method is the link local, because it's also part for the network ID. And the interface ID is, of course, off manual or automatically. More details will follow. Okay, some of you words a link local address. How is it made or created on your local internet interfaces? It is using the MAC address effect. The MAC address of your interface is split in two halves. You can see it. And we shift in between the FFF0. So you get another one. So you go from 48 to 64 types. That's therefore it stands here. This here, the extended unique identifier 64. That stands for this here. Then you do effect and discovery. Is this official, what I call an official address, not already in use? And you use the solicited node multicasting for that. If it's not in use, so you are unique, to mark it unique, you will flip here the seventh bit from 0 to 1. Therefore, the 00 will translate into 02. And before you put the FE80 double column. And then you get an official link local address. It's as simple as that. Okay, the stateless address configuration. So it is based on the technique I explained. So you get an official MAC address. It is using the MAC addresses. Also, what is stateless? That means you will get an IPv6 address automatically. You don't have to do anything. You start up your computer, you get an official IPv6 address. Therefore, you have a router effect that is listening to you. You send out a neighbor discovery protocol from, I want an IPv6 address. Is here a router available that is willing to serve me an IPv6 address? If there is one, it will just send you one. Random effect. But it's not that random. The first pass is fixed because that is your official IPv6 addresses which are configured. I will show you an example in a few moments. But the last part is always bound to the MAC address. So your MAC address is in fact enforced on that interface ID part. That means it's not so random anymore. You are trackable around the world. And to make your kind of hiding a bit, there's a privacy extension. And on Linux, if you just use this command, your interface ID will be completely random. So you won't see the MAC address anymore. And then your, and in fact, it's a combination of two. So you have the official prefix, the 48 bits from the internet provider, and this, the last 16 from your local company, and the interface ID. For that, you do a router solicitation effect. You discover, you request. For the routers and nodes, it's the same technique. I already told you, if you don't have a source address, you have only zeros. The destination is the solicited node multicasting. And then you will get a reply back, and the source address will be filled in. The advertisement. There are some routers do it periodically, because they will check each other, is my address space still valid? Is the router table still valid? And they're using the techniques of solicitation advertisement for each other. Also for the other addresses within, is it updated or not? That is the technique. It's in fact not different than today. It's an extension of the protocol. Important here is, this is an example of a router advertisement daemon that you can run on a gateway system. For example, if you do a tunneling IPv6 to IPv4, vice versa. This is a simple definition. You give here the prefix that you got from your provider, of your tunnel broker, and you make your gateway forwarding IPv6 addresses to the internet if it's a tunnel, and that's enough effect. If you do a router solicitation or a non-solicitation to your environment, and you will discover here that there is a daemon, a router advertisement daemon running, it will reply the daemon and will give you, in fact, the prefix back, and you will fill in the interface ID yourself. Okay? It's not so difficult. That's the stateless technique. You don't have to do anything. Just configure it, start the daemon, and your complete company is already covered for it. So simple is it. But maybe you want a bit different. You want the stateful technique. Stateful is in fact using the DHCP v6 version, not the v4 version. You can use even a combination of stateless and stateful, and using the stateful for the time to live or some other parameters to give. So this is a technique that your network administrators will know. That is used today for all the IPv4. It's not different. And you can just say for that range of PCs or laptops or whatever, of that range, we give that range of subnet addresses. You can even use your local IPv6 addresses. You don't have to have official ones. So there's always, we used to have, for example, the private ones, the 10s, the 172 and 192-168 range of addresses. The private addresses is also possible. So DHCP can be used for the stateful. And then you control, in fact, which MAC address will get which IPv6 address. Also important is the naming, of course. Nobody wants to remember an IPv6 address itself. You have to have a good name resolution. The good news is that the current configuration files can be used. You can just add your IPv6 addresses, and for that we have what we call the Quad A address types. So you can have the same server for an IPv4 address here, but also a Quad A IPv6 address. The reverse one is a bit different because we have a new domain route, root in fact, the IPv4 ARPA. You can have write that completely backwards in bits, in fact, and separated by dot, dot, dot. But you can also put an origin and here add, in fact, the network ID part. And then you only have to do the interface IP part pointers, reverse pointers then. That's the DNS effect. That is how does it look. But okay, that's for network. The Quad A and the reverse IP address, IPv6 ARPA, are now new, and especially for IPv6. How do we go from IPv4 to IPv6? There are three types of transition mechanisms: the dual stack, tunneling, and translation. I will go over all three of them. The dual stack is quite, as it said, simple in that sense. The IPv4 and the IPv6 are living next to each other, stack-wise. I think most Linux systems today and most Windows or Mac systems are dual stack today. Quite important to enable it by default, in fact. Because if you have IPv6 addresses, it will try if it can talk to an IPv6 address. If your application is quite clever enough, it could automatically switch via DNS, for example, to an IPv6 or IPv4 address. So your service can in fact be dual stack also. Of course, the application behind it must understand IPv6 addresses and must understand IPv4, which is probably the case, but IPv6 could be an issue. We have to start, if you have written in-house IPv4 addresses, to start thinking about replacing some parts of the code and make it affect IPv6 aware also. There is a quite good program on the internet that can help you with that. It's in my paper. Paper will be on my internet website after this talk, which gives you more insight documentation. But this is quite important. Applications that are IPv4 will talk to the IPv4 stack, and applications which are IPv6 related will talk to the IPv6 stack or through the IPv6 stack. Dual stack. Tunneling is a very simple technique which you can start deploying today. There are three main tunnel providers available on the internet. There are more, but the three main ones will be listed in the next slide. But the technique is as following. You have an IPv6 local area network inside in your company, and you want to talk to IPv6 services on the internet, for example. You can use a tunnel for that. So you define a gateway. This is, in effect, capable of talking from your internet, local internet IPv6, and it will translate it or route it through a tunnel to the other side. That means that your IPv4, well, for be able to do that, it's not an IPv6 tunnel itself, it's in fact an IPv4 network that you're using, the current internet. So that gateway will translate your IPv6 address, or it will encapsulate it into an IPv4 address. And that's the technique here. The address, IPv4 address is prepended, and then your address space is following here. On the other side, this side here, this part is cut off, and then you route again in the IPv6 world. It's effect that simple, tunneling. Also very simple to set it up. So the three tunnel brokers available on the internet, the three main ones are listed here. The Hurricane Electronic is, to my opinion, a very good one, because you can, for an administrator point of view, you can control quite a lot. You can configure your gateway yourself with configuration files. For the other two, you have a special program which makes it more easier to start with, but at the end to understand the how it works, how you have to configure an interface ID, for example, or a gateway, Hurricane is better. It also have introduction courses to IPv6, and you can even train yourself and get certifications, all for free. But again, I don't want to say this one is better. They all work perfect. I used all three of them. It's excellent service you get. It's for free, and it's that they deserve a very welcome applause for it. But check it out, these three. And tunneling is very easy to set up, and it gives you the possibility to start with IPv4, tunneling to IPv6, or vice versa, very easily, and it's so easy to set up, really. Then we have the translation technique, and that is called what we are knowing today as the network address translation. That has a few drawbacks. You can hide a lot of addresses, but it is limited in the amount of connections which are available. It will be used a lot, I think, but I'm not in favor for it because it has a lot of problems. But it will be used, for example, to hide a lot of legacy devices which are not capable of serving IPv6 addresses or services. So you will have some kind of black boxes before it that in fact will do the translation to that old device, IPv4 address. Therefore, it will be a success, I think, but to be honest, I'm not in favor of doing it standardly. It's better to use the dual stack one, or even tunneling in the beginning. Security. When you set up a tunnel, it's so easy to set up, you're not protected. You all know IP tables for the IPv4 addresses. For the IPv6, we have the IPv6 tables. You have to set it up, otherwise you're open to the world. Also, if you started a router advertisement daemon, even from the internet, you could broadcast, you solicit for an IP address and you would get one if you don't protect it. IPv6 tables, very important. Security considerations. I already explained it a bit with the MAC addresses, which are not really globally unique. If you don't do the privacy extensions, you could really be tracked around the world. That's not that difficult, because the prefix, network prefix would be different, but your interface ID would be the same everywhere. So you would be trackable, but you can hide it with the privacy extensions, which were explained in the previous slides, so setting one. So the big brother could be watching you. More important, how do you become IPv6 ready? One piece of advice I can give you is if you have to buy new equipment, make sure it's IPv6 capable. So you have to check it. Also, the same is true for software. Make sure that the vendor is willing to give the support now, today, or within a few months if they have a track and IPv6 compliance. In the paper, there's also some more background information where you can find the IPv6 ready logo program, which are listed all the equipment which are already IPv6 capable. So to start, make an inventory. It's not that interesting job, I must say, but okay, that's important. You have to list which printers, which legacy devices could be a problem. You could say, I have not an issue today, but it could be an issue tomorrow. If you need IPv6, you have to have a knowledge how many devices are still not up to date. To study Hurricane Electronic, study, do the courses. There are a lot of labs on the internet even. A lot of books are available. Replace the hardware as soon as possible, old hardware. Setting up DNS, do it from the public service, so that your interface to the world is already IPv6 capable, and then you can work from the outside to the inside. So you don't have to rush to become IPv6 ready. But you can start, you get getting acquainted, you can play, you can even join the Internet Days, IPv6 Internet Day in 8th of June, and you get dual stacks, which are standardly on every system today. Some do's and don'ts. Do, make a phasing approach, very important. Don't try to do everything in one go, that's impossible. You will make too many mistakes. You have to make a plan effect, make a listing of all devices, get rid of them. You have to make sure that your software is getting recompiled for IPv6, for example, and do it like that. Also measure here, outside in, and then from the inside out. So go from the official DNS servers, web servers, and then going back to the internal mail servers, etc., etc. Renumbering is much easier in IPv6 than it was in IPv4. Thanks to the router advertisement, thanks to the DHCP, stateful, stateless, it all works. It's not that difficult. Quite important here, don't try to separate IPv6 with IPv4 networks. They can coexist on the same network, so don't be afraid of it. Don't do everything in one go. Don't try to appoint too many specialists from the outside. Try to get the knowledge inside, so educate yourself. Even if you're a Linux administrator, study it, try it, set up a tunnel, play with it, etc., etc. And try not to buy from vendors which are not IPv6 ready or have no plan in the near future to become ready. That was the end of my presentation. I'm now open for questions. Please join. Yes, but could you use a mic? Because I don't think from so far I will understand it.
Is there a performance difference between IPv4 and IPv6?
No, no.
Because of the advertising, maybe?
No, there is absolutely no performance boost. It's no boost, in fact. It's even, for the backbone routers, it's even much better. Because in the IPv4 world, there were, for the moment, millions of router tables. Very huge. In the IPv6, it's 1,000 times less.
Is it possible every time to change the IP address? So you have said that the possibility is that you can change your identifier, so it's not unique anymore. Mm-hmm. And how often can I do this? Is it possible to change it every time?
Yes, it will change every time, because it's if you enable the privacy extension, every time that you enable your interface, it's a different address. So it's different, yes.
Have you any experience with authentication for router advertisements? As far as I see, there's a possibility of an attacker in your internal network sending out false router advertisements and manipulating the traffic flowing through a network.
Yeah. Yes, of course, if you are just using the stateless technique, so the router advertisement, if you set up yourself a router advertisement daemon, you could really conflict with the other one. So therefore, there's also within the stateless technique a possibility. I didn't show it in my slides because to make it shorter, and technique to make it unique, so that you need a unique identifier effect. That's possible. And even for the routers, it's built in. What I showed here was the effect for the end gateway host. If you want to set it up yourself for a tunneling, you can set it so easily, but okay, you can misuse it, of course. But I think in the commercial environments, the router advertisement stateless technique will not be used because it's for security considerations. They will use the stateful technique, so using the HTTP v6. Yeah. Any other questions?
So about the address space allocation, you were talking about how IPv4 addresses were wasted basically because they didn't understand what scope that the internet would have it eventually. Isn't there something similar happening now? I mean, there's like 64 bits to use locally. I mean, no. Plus the 16 bits, so there's a lot of bits that I don't see many organizations will actually use up. Why has it been chosen that way? And because maybe we are still not having the scope, but it will be one day. That may be not enough again.
Yes, that's a possibility that over 30 years from now we will have the same discussion as we had with IPv4. But it has been calculated that with the amount of addresses today in IPv6 available, we could grow from 7 million of people to 7 billion of people, and we wouldn't have any problems so far. So there's so much address spaces available, that won't be a problem. For example, just want to mention in the IPv4 world, today there is a shortage of usage, and there's already not a black market, but an exchange, stock exchange, to buy obsolete IPv6 blocks. For example, Microsoft, about last month, I think 65,000 IP addresses from ex-Nortel. And IPv4, yes. Yeah, because there are so shortages within Microsoft, that means that Microsoft won't use IPv6 internally, for sure of it. But okay, I don't want to blame Microsoft because all the rest is also using primary IPv4 addresses, not IPv6. But it is gaining faster and faster deployed today, that's for sure. And I would encourage you to start using it, start playing with it. Yeah.
So is there another question? No, then thank you, Krasen, for giving us some tips for exploring IPv6. The next talk here in the room London would be in German language again. It would be Ralf Spanneberg, and he took a look at the security of IPv6.